Now it's the last chapter of Joel, and it's a prophecy. It starts in verse 1. It doesn't say it in my translation, but actually in the original, "For behold," he's really saying is, from what's gone before, just watch this, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's there's a connection. And behold means, take note, this is big stuff, yeah? Right. So in those days and at that time, well, it's promising good times are coming. It sounds like good times are coming?
Yeah.
Yes, right, yeah. But, in those days and at that time, he's looking again at the time of Messiah's reign, you know? It was in the last days he spoke about in chapter 2. So, we're talking about the time of Messiah's reign, and I'd like to suggest, really, he's looking right forward to the end of time, to the final judgment. Of course, there are in sort of parallel pre-runs, in a way, but it's the end of time we're talking about. You're going to come before the judgment, how about that? Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to see anyway. And he says he's going to restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem. Yeah? So things are going to look good for them at last.
Yeah.
One thing, and I'll mention it later on, but one thing that's important about when you read Old Testament prophecies, it sounds very much like it's all focused on Israel and Jerusalem and all that. And it is my conviction that as we get nearer the end of time, it all begins to focus back on that.
Yes.
But, having said that, we need to realise that for the Old Testament they didn't have the revelation that Gentiles were going to be in on it as well. Mm-hmm. Judah and Jerusalem, yes, it means that particular area, but it means the people of God as well.
Yes.
And that's what's coming in on that. So don't worry, you don't need to live in Jerusalem to enjoy the benefits of this chapter for the moment anyway. You've got the idea. Right. So the Lord says, "I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat." So God's going to get all the nations together, call them all together, and the Lord's going to judge them. When he says he's going to bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, basically it's a play on the name of the word Jehoshaphat. You know what Jehoshaphat means?
Yeah, it's
a day of judgment. Yeah. The word Jehoshaphat means the Lord judges.
Uh-huh.
That's his name. Yeah? Yahweh judges, Jehoshaphat. Yeah? And so God's saying is, "I'm going to bring them down to the place of judgment where I'll judge them."
How many nations would have been at that time?
Quite a lot, yeah. I mean, the world is
Middle East
and the different nations around the Middle East, yeah. But this is talking about the whole world now, I think, really. So we talk.
Yeah.
I can't imagine everybody in the whole world is going to turn up, but representatives of the whole world are sort of figured in the story. I put it that way, yeah. But when it comes to the final judgment, he says all the nations. You know when it says in Matthew 25 about Jesus on the throne, and all the nations like goats and sheep will be gathered before him. Yeah, all nations. So how's he going to fit them all in?
Yeah,
that's not my problem. Yeah, he can do it.
He
can do it.
Yes,
he'll know how to do it. Yes, okay. But
this room,
yeah, all the nations are going to be gathered into this place, and it's the valley of Jehoshaphat. Really, is we're assuming it's just outside Jerusalem. Really, mm-hmm. Jerusalem's the centre of operations for God to be doing His work in. That's the idea. Yeah, and he says the reason he's going to bring them into judgment is verse that there I will enter into judgment against them. Mm-hmm. So God's going to have a few words to say to the nations. This is the unbelieving people, is what he's talking about. When he uses the word nations here, he means those that aren't God's people, unbelievers. Yeah. He's going to have a judgment against them concerning my inheritance, my people, Israel. Yeah. So God's got a few complaints about how they've treated his people.
Mm-hmm.
Jews in particular here, but God's people in general in the world, you can say. Yeah. So how they've treated his people. And he says this, "For they scattered my people among the nations, and divided up my land. They cast lots for my people, and traded boys for prostitutes, and they sold girls for wine, that they might drink." There are several accusations there.
Mm-hmm.
That what they'd done was, that they had scattered his people. Basically, they'd taken them, sold them as slaves, out around the world. Yeah. So they scattered his people, and sent them among the nations. So they've captured the Israelites at times and sent them out.
It was on the radio this morning about
trafficking.
Yes.
People and that.
Still going on.
Still terrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
They treat them like objects.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Guy gave a woman away for a cigarette.
Yeah.
No.
But that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Where was
it?
India.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was India. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the guy selling it, I mean, these are the God's children, boys and girls, young men and women. Well, one's being sold, traded in for a prostitute, and the other is being sold off for a drink down at the boozer.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Cheap. They're counted as worthless. That's really what it's got. God says, I've taken note of all this, how you've treated these.
Yeah.
And God takes note of how he treats his children, whatever they are. I mean, this is focused on Israel, of course, but worldwide, we can say this. God takes a note how the world treats his kids. Yeah. And he's going to enter into judgment with them. He says that God's going to sort them out. Yeah? We've got an advocate. Did you know that? God's going to be their advocate. I'm going to enter into judgment against them. In other words, he's going to not be their defense lawyer. He's going to be their accusation lawyer. Yeah? And we've got a defense lawyer, like Israel has there. His name's Jesus. It's a lovely verse in 1 John, isn't it? It says, If any man sins, you know, just remember we've got an advocate with the Father, Jesus. Yeah. So this is the Lord speaking on behalf of his people. He's going to take them to task for it. Now, verse 4 we've got to, yeah? Just before we do that, yeah? Where was it that this happened to Israel? That their land was divided up, their inhabitants were scattered up and sold as slaves. Do you know? There have been small occurrences during the time of Nebuchadnezzar with the Babylonian captivity. That's one. But Israel remained a land in those days. I mean, it was occupied by others that Nebuchadnezzar brought in and whatever. When was the land parcelled up, its name changed, and the people chucked out and sold?
With the Romans.
The Romans. Yeah. So this is a really long-range prophecy. It's We've seen chapter 2 is about prophesying the day of Pentecost when the Spirit comes. Mm-hmm. This is after the day of Pentecost, and it's when the Romans scattered it, but it's been going on since then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's only just now that they've started coming back to the land, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Now, so the Lord takes them off. Yeah, he deals with the surrounding nations, the locals, but the locals are just an example of everybody else, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what have you against me, O Tyre and Sidon, and all your regions of Philistia? So that's the northern kingdoms and the ones on the west. And he's challenging them. He's saying, what have you got against me? Because that's what it really is about, yeah? They're making a claim that they've got good reasons for attacking the Israelites. It's their excuses, yeah? So he says, what have you got against me? Are you repaying me for something I have done? Well, that's their excuse, but they attacked for no reason at all. Yeah, so God's going to take them to task. If you're paying me back, I will swiftly and speedily return on your own heads what you have done. Yes? Yeah. You are going to face the music, is what he's saying to them. Yes? You don't blame me, I'm blaming you. That's where it's coming at. And God takes note, I will repay. Yeah? They get a grudge against Israel. Well, God's remembered that, and so he's going to deal with that. And what have they done? Verse 5, for you took my silver and my gold and carried off my finest treasures to your temples. Well, they came and cleaned the land out.
Yeah.
Took the money, took all the stuff, and also the temple treasuries as well. I don't know if you've seen the Titus arch. It's in Rome. On there it shows you them taking the Israelites off as slaves, and the temple ornaments, including the candlestick, they carted it all off, took the lot. You sold the people of Judah and Jerusalem to the Greeks, that you might send them far from their homeland. So they sold them as there was a thriving, well, still is a thriving slave trade in the Middle East. And the Phoenicians, which is one of them, were involving in selling people that they captured in war or been sold to them by others, and sold them on to the Greeks. The Greeks were further away, so they'd sent them way off into the distance. Yeah. So God says, I've noticed that, you did that. And then he also says this, see, I'm going to rouse them out of their places to which you sold them. You thought you got rid of them. But I'm going to get them to pop their heads up again.
Yeah.
Right, so God start. This is what God's going to do now. He's made the accusations. He's told them what they're guilty of. Yeah. And now he's telling them what he's going to do about it. Yeah. So he's going to raise them up to where they told him, and I will return on your own heads what you have done. Payback time. And as you dished it out, so it will return. Yes. So he says, I will sell your sons and daughters to the people of Judah, and they will sell them to the Sabaeans, a nation far away. I mean, basically the Lord's saying, I mean, it's I don't think they'd be buying slaves and selling them, but the idea is that what he's saying is that what you've done, you get paid back for. Yes. You sold them to the northwest, I'll sell you to the southeast. Yes, same idea. That's what's going on. Right. And then the last little bit of verse 8 is, the Lord has spoken. You know what that means?
Once he's spoken, it's done.
That's it. Yeah. The decision is made. No changing. That's it. Fixed. Right. And so, this is what he calls out now. Proclaim this among the nations. Get the trumpets out. Get everybody ready. Prepare for war. Actually, the translation, some say, sanctify. Yeah, a war. They were to offer their sacrifices. That's what they did as a preparation for war. But they've got to get ready for war. God's calling them up to come and fight. Yeah. Rouse the warriors. Let all the fighting men draw near and attack. He's really saying, come on, bring it on. Come on, let's see now what you can do. That's what he's calling to the nations. And the nations think they're big, you know, and important. But when God's going to face them, they'll find out they've taken on a bit more than they can think of. So he's calling all the nations to come near and attack. And then verse 10, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hook into spears. Let the weakling say, I am strong. What's God, well, it's almost ridiculing them. But what's he calling them to do?
Bring all your weapons, bring what you like.
Bring your weapons, yeah. Make some more if you need to. Get all your weapons, all your firepower, and all the people, nobody's exempt. Let the weaklings, you know, get toughened up. You're all coming to face me. That's what he's getting at, yes? Right, so, come quickly, all you nations from every side, and assemble there. So he's calling the world. And I think, that's my personal view from what this, it's a prophecy, it's about the future. I mean, it did happen to some degree, but it happened with the Romans to some degree, but this is world size, all nations, not just the Romans, yeah?
Happening now.
I think that the world is ganging up on Israel. That's what he's saying.
Yes.
And I mean, it's ganging up on Israel, but it's also ganging up on Christians.
Yes.
I mean, the two are connected in the last days. Yeah.
And it's already working because it's on the other day where the Iran is sending rockets.
Yes.
Right.
Israel have got this protection.
The dome. Yes. Advanced. They need a better dome than that, though. They need the Lord. Yeah.
Yes. Send them over and we'll protect them up in the air. So
yes. Yeah, so the United Nations is a great name because there are aspects in the United Nations which are united against Israel.
Yes.
It's true. I mean, if you look at the resolutions that have been passed in the UN against Israel, they vastly outnumber those against all the human rights abuses, Korea, Saudi Arabia, some of the African states, you know, Syria, thousands and thousands of people, chemical bombs and all this sort of stuff. Not a word.
No.
Israel defends itself and they get criticised.
Yeah.
So it's happening today, that's the thing, but I think it's closing in a way as well. Yeah. That's what's going on. But the Lord says, you bring it on, it's alright, yeah. Right, get all your people together, right. Let the nation, this is verse 12, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Oh no, sorry, no. Come quickly all you nations from every side and assemble there. Then this is, bring down your warriors, O Lord. Yeah. What's Joel is saying is, Lord, send your troops in. And who are the Lord's warriors?
Angels.
They're angels. Yes, they're angels. Now I don't know how AK-47 can cope with an angel. I doubt it. Angels are a lot better at fighting than this lot. Yeah. So the Lord's bringing his angels in as a judgment. Yeah. And there's a lovely bit I read some time ago about, I think it was Elisha, when the city where he was surrounded by the Syrian troops, it was in his day, and his servant went out and had a look outside, and we're surrounded, boss, what are we going to do? And the Lord, he prayed to the Lord, Elisha, he says, Lord, open his eyes, Yeah, and he says when he looked, he saw chariots and horses of fire surrounding them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a comment by Spurgeon. He says, chariots of fire are better than chariots of iron. Any day. Yeah. So God's got his warriors. That's the idea. That's
that
what we're
doing. In Syria on the march, aren't they now? With the ISIS.
Yes, yes. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, right. We've got, no, all right. So we've got to gather them all together. God's calling his angels. Let the nations be roused and let them advance into the valley of Jehoshaphat. So let all these people come and advance into the valley of Jehoshaphat. It's that place of judgment again.
Yeah.
But it's also, the interesting thing about this, the valley of Jehoshaphat, it's in Jerusalem really, around the area. But the name Jehoshaphat would bring up in the minds of people, I suspect, that something happened during the reign of King Jehoshaphat. Yeah? It's a great chapter. I don't know if I've got the reference for it.
Is that when they found the
scrolls? No. Well, that's not what it's about. No. I haven't written the reference down. But basically, this is the story. Jehoshaphat sees the Moabites and the Edomites coming like clouds of enemies against him. Yeah? And he goes out and looks, goes, oh! And he's got a great verse. I love that. As a pastor, I've always loved this verse. Lord, we don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you. Yeah? Right? So we haven't got the solution, Lord, but you have.
Yeah.
Right? And it says, a prophet came and said to him, get ready, go out to face them, but don't send the troops in first, send the musicians. Right? We go with the music. Send the musicians first. Right?
And just, the background.
Just stand still. Just watch me,
yeah.
Right? And what happens is, he says, when the musicians started to praise the Lord, he sent confusion amongst the enemies, and they killed each other.
Yeah.
And all the Israelites said, the battle belongs to the Lord, is what it's about. Yeah?
Yeah.
The Israelites were told, just sit there, wait till it's finished, and then you go mop up all the stuff they've left behind. Yeah. So this is what the idea that's been conjured up here. All these nations coming to destroy and wipe out Israel, little old Israel, and God's people is what it's about. They're trying to destroy the believers, and God says, just watch this. Sit back, boys. Let me show you what I can do.
Yeah.
So, that's the idea of the Valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will sit and judge all the nations on every side. So, the judgments are coming. Now, swing in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, trample the grapes, for the winepress is full, and the vats overflow. So great is their wickedness. Swing in the sickle. Where does that bring any bars to you?
What's
a sickle? A scythe. It's a scythe. Yes.
Yeah.
It's harvest time. Yes, that's the idea. Let me take you to Jesus used that imagery.
Did he?
Yeah. Chapter 13 of Matthew. Just look at that. That's it. This sort of gives you the parallel to it.
Jean read that verse, and I just got this picture of you with a shoulder heel.
Swinging the side. Oh, praise the Lord. Well, it's not Jean doing the scything and the treading. But you get the idea. Matthew 13, I've got verse 39 there. It's the parable of the weeds. Let's have a look. Verse 37, we'll start there.
It's page 979.
In yours, mine's 980, I've got to on this one. Page, it's Matthew 13, verse 37.
Oh, yeah.
He answered, the one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed stands for the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are the devil, are the angels. Yeah, get it right. Got it wrong way around there. Yes. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are the angels. In other words, when God's going to judge the nations, he gathers them together, he cuts
people.
Them down, and he gives them the judgment.
Yeah.
Yes? And he's going to, so when Jesus comes back, he comes with his angels, yeah, to rescue his people. Yeah.
Mm.
And that's the picture there. It also turns up, if you look at it, in Revelation 14, 15. Revelation 14, verse 15. I looked, or verse 14, yes. 14:14, I looked and there before me was a white cloud, and seated on the cloud was one like the Son of Man, with a crown of gold on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. Then another angel came out of the temple and called in a loud voice to him who was sitting in the cloud, take your sickle and reap, for the time to reap has come, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. So he who was seated on the cloud swung his sickle over the earth, and the earth was harvested. And so the Lord's leading the harvesting.
So he's gathering in the believers.
Well, he gathers in the believers, but he says in that parable, get the weeds first, and then we'll put the wheat into the barn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, burn the weeds.
Yeah, we'll put the wheat into the barn, not the weeds.
Oh, the wheat.
Yeah, wheat.
Yeah.
So it's the judgment of the end of the world. That's what Joel, I believe, is talking about.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Trample the grapes. Right, verse 14. We're back to that. Multitudes in the valley of decision. And the decision's been, that's the valley of the verdict, you could say. The verdict's been given. They're guilty. Yeah? For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The time's come. It's finished. Time's up, basically, you could say. Yeah?
So like people in North Korea, believers, who are being killed.
Yeah.
For their faith. This is an encouragement to them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. God's going to sort it out. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of the Chinese are getting killed now.
Yes, yeah.
And Indians.
Yeah. As I say, it obviously focuses on Israel and Judah and all that because it's Old Testament in that sense.
Yeah.
But I think it's also the fact that as we get towards the end of time, things are moving back to that. Yeah. In fact, Jesus is coming back to Jerusalem, we know that. So focus is down there. But God's got his children now all over the place, and as they treat his children in Timbuktu, they'll have to deal with the Lord as much as he deals with them outside Jerusalem's gates as well. You got the idea? Yeah. Yeah. Multitudes in the valley of decision. So everybody has to face the Lord, yeah? And then there are the signs in the heavens. We read about this before. The sun and the moon will be darkened and the stars no longer shine. You've heard that when Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes, the sun be darkened, the moon turned to blood and so on.
A sign of that with the red moon.
Well, some say so.
Is that a fairly recent?
No, it's been happening for centuries. Ever since God made the sun and the moon, there's always been solar eclipses.
It's in the Bible,
about
the red moon.
There was
it says that the moon will turn to black.
Yes, but there have been red moons throughout the centuries.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just the orbit of the Earth relative to the moon. If it just gets in the way of the sunlight hitting the moon,
it
makes the moon go red.
So
yeah. Well, some say it's significant. I'll hold my fire on that one. Yeah.
What about a blue moon?
A blue moon.
Oh, that
there isn't a blue moon. It's just a song. Yeah. It's in a song. That means a very rare event, a blue moon, isn't it? Yes. That's the idea. Yeah. Yeah. But what he's saying is that there will be changes in the entire universe is what I see it as. As I say, some see this as the coming of the millennium. That's fine. I'm quite happy with that. But it still looks to me that these changes are bigger than just a few little bits changed here and there. This is catastrophic for Earth and for the universe. It's God's changing everything. Anyway. Sun and moon darken, the stars no longer shine. The Lord will roar from Zion and thunder from Jerusalem. That's a storm and a half, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. When the Lord roars, the earth shakes. Yes, that's what's going to happen. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's where that's his headquarters. That's where God is. Yeah. He's coming to vindicate his name.
Yeah.
And show the world that he really is who he is. And his people are the apple of his eye.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have messed with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The earth and the sky will tremble. Well, as I say, when the Lord roars, you'd expect things to shake. Right, yeah. But who's doing the shaking? It's the earth, and it's the unbelievers on earth that face the judgment of God. It's a terrible time.
Yes.
Wicked people facing a terrible judgment. Yeah? But, it's only half a sentence, but the Lord will be a refuge for his people, a stronghold for the people of Israel. So while it's scaring the people of unbelief to death, the sound of the Lord for his children is, wow, the cavalry's come.
Yeah.
you got the idea. And the to me, you see this time again in the Bible, there's some lovely examples of where God's judgments have got two sides to them. It depends on whose side you're on.
Yeah.
So when the Egyptians were chasing the Israelites out of Egypt towards the Red Sea, he says the pillar of cloud moved between the Egyptians and the Israelites.
Yeah.
When the Israelites saw it, it was a pillar of fire.
Mm.
When the Egyptians saw it, it was black.
Yeah.
Dark to them,
yeah,
but light to the Israelites. Yeah. So God, in the same act, can make a great distinction. Same with the flood.
Yeah.
If you're on the boat, you're sailing, literally. Yeah. That's the redeemed.
Yeah.
But if you're outside, it's judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how God's actions are two-edged in that sense. Yeah. So a refuge for his people. So if you're believing in the Lord, you'll be all right. You'll be all right?
Yeah.
Good. Then, verse 17, then you will know that I, the Lord your God, dwell in Zion, my holy hill. Yes. At last. Everybody's going to know it. We're all going to get it at last, yes. Then you will know that I, the Lord your God, dwell in Zion. Because up to that time, you know, believers can struggle with how their feelings are, how their faith is. When they're being hammered, they think, Lord, where are you? You know. And that can be a real challenge. But he says, time's coming, be no doubt at all. You'll know I'm with you. It raised a little question I was thinking about this morning, and it was part of a discussion we had last night. What do you say to someone when they say, how can there be a God when there's such terrible things happen in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? That's the usual way people
ask, isn't it? Yeah.
And do you know, I was thinking about it, and it's the wrong question. Because what they're assuming is, the terrible things happen because basically we're really nice people, and bad things shouldn't happen to nice people. That's what we're thinking, isn't it? Yeah. That's why terrible things happen, because we're nice people, and bad things shouldn't happen. The right way to see it, and I mean the world doesn't accept this, but the right way to see it is, why is it that it's not completely jungle out there?
Mm.
Is somebody stepping in and stopping the mess that we're creating for it all? Yes? That's the answer. It's not why do bad things happen. You want to ask, why do good things happen when a world's in chaos and people are evil and sinful?
Mm-hmm.
God's, and he says it in Genesis, God says, just before the flood came, I won't always cause my spirit to strive with men. His days are numbered. Basically God's saying, I've had the brakes on.
Yeah.
I've kept the reins on the people. But the moment I let go, you'll find out how nice people are. Yeah. So why do bad things happen? The answer is, you want to ask the question, why is it that good things happen in a world that's full of wicked people? And the answer is, because there's a God out there looking after us.
God says, the hardship you go through makes you stronger.
Well, God can use those things, yes. Yeah. Anyway, we're back to this. So it's double-sided. Judgment for the wicked, but blessing and deliverance for his people. Then you will know that I dwell in Zion. Jerusalem will be holy. Never again will foreigners invade her. Well, that's what's been the history of Jerusalem.
Been invaded
right, left and centre, down the centuries. So you can assume this prophecy hasn't been fulfilled yet.
No.
When's it going to be fulfilled?
At the end, shortly.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, God's going to make Jerusalem the centre of his empire, mm-hmm. his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's it then. Time up.
Yeah.
It's all finished. And then as I say, I understand this is the new heaven and the new earth being brought in.
Yes.
Yeah. Others would say it's the millennium, the reign of Jesus. No, the two fit together really. But what I'm saying is that it says that God's going to make everything right at last. So God's in the right place, is at the centre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Jerusalem is the right place. It's the place where God's name is honoured. And never again will foreigners invade her. Mm-hmm. That little idea turns up so often in the Old Testament and in the New, and I'll give you some examples of that if I can find it. If you look at Zechariah 14:21, I've mentioned this before, but if you look right at the end of Zechariah 14:21, it's talking about the Feast of Tabernacles at the end, and about everything's going to be holy in verse 21. Every pot in Jerusalem and Judah will be holy to the Lord Almighty. All who come to sacrifice will take some of the pots and cook in them. And on that day there will no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord Almighty. There won't be any Canaanites. That's foreigners. Yes. If we have it there, yeah? Mm. There won't be any Canaanites. What are Canaanites? Have you met any lately? You have?
Is that unbelievers?
It's unbelievers.
Yes.
Yes, those that aren't God's people.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me just take you now to Revelation. It's chapter, let me find this right reference now. Chapter 22, verse 15. Right at the end. Chapter 22, verse 15. Verse 14. Blessed are those who wash their robes, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may go through the gates into the city. That's God's new kingdom. Yeah? Right. Outside are the dogs, those who practice magic arts, the sexually immoral, the murderers, the idolaters, and everyone who loves and practices falsehoods.
Yeah.
Outside are the dogs.
Yeah.
What are the dogs?
The dogs are unbelievers.
The dogs aren't animals.
No,
it's unbelievers.
Yeah.
Yes. In other words, he's saying is, unholy won't enter into the final kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? They're separated. Yeah, we know it's hell, but he's using geographical ideas for this. Yeah.
Where is this?
It's Revelation 22, verse 15. In other words, there's a separation. Again, God judging the wicked, bringing grace and blessing and relief to the believers. Yeah. So back to Joel. Never again will foreigners invade her. Peace, that's called peace, by the way, yeah? At last. Then, in that day, that's that day, you know, the day of the final state of things, in that day, the mountains will drip new wine and the hills flow with milk, and all the ravines of Judah will run with water. What's that image? I mean, it's earth image in a sense, and I mean it will be a new earth, I think. I'm sure it will be a new earth. Yeah. What sort of image does it mean? The mountains will drip new wine. What's that mean?
It's that purity. It's all going to be pure.
Drip new wine.
Blessings,
yes. Yeah. But on a physical level, what does it mean? Does it mean to say you'd be walking with wellies because you'd be running into...
No.
Just be plenty. Isn't it?
It's an abundance, the harvest.
Yeah.
It runs new wine because the crops are growing, the harvest is plentiful, yes? And what about the hills will flow with milk? What does that mean?
Milk and honey.
It means the cattle are thriving, yes? They're milk machines, they're not really, I mean they're amazing creatures, the cows of course, yeah? But what he's really saying is that God will bless, remember Joel's been talking about the harvest being destroyed, and God makes a promise he's going to restore it. Well, when the mountains and the hills are flowing wine and honey, or milk rather, things are pretty good. That's what he's saying. God's going to bless, that's the idea, yes? Yeah. Flowing, and all the waters of Judah, or the ravines will run with water. What is the essential ingredient for good life here on earth? Water. Clean, fresh water. Yeah? And that's going to be there. And then we see something that turns up in the other prophets as well. A fountain will flow out of the Lord's house and will water the valley of acacias. Have you heard about the fountain that flows out of the Lord's house? Does it come across anywhere else? Do you know?
Is it when... The river from the throne.
The river from the throne. In Ezekiel, Ezekiel sees this temple, and at the out of the temple comes this little stream, and the further it goes, the bigger it gets, till it's a massive river that you can't swim across, and wherever it touches, life begins. That's the same idea. Yeah? The fountain is coming from the throne. It's the power, the love, the grace, the blessing of God that's flowing down, and it's going to water the valley of acacias. Where do acacias grow? No, they don't. Acacias grow in deserts. They're scrub trees. Yes, they are trees that grow in the dry. Yes.
You get them in this country, though, don't you?
Well, he's talking about there, isn't he? The Valley of Acacias is where it's bone dry. The only thing that can grow is acacia trees. Yeah. Yes, but when God begins to change things and begins to bless his new creation, what's going to happen is the dry places become fertile. Yes, that's the idea.
That's the old saying.
I'm afraid not, John. No, right. Lastly,
I had the recording.
But I'll see what I can do. But Egypt will be desolate and Edom a desert waste. It's the idea, again, that separation, yeah? Now, again, this is my personal view on this. I think he's using the terms like Egypt and so on, meaning unbelievers, the outside. Because there are Egyptians who are believers. There's loads of Egyptians who are believers, yeah? And in fact, in one of the prophets, he says, Egypt and Assyria are going to be joined together with Israel as part of God's blessing. Yeah. So he's using the word Egypt and these here, these outsiders, those that were traditional enemies of the people of God, he's saying is, they are for it. There's some end of the match for them, yes? Right, so Edom and Egypt will be a desert waste because of the violence done to the people of Judah, in whose land they shed innocent blood. And that's happened in the world, you know, that God's people, and the Jews in particular, have just been targeted for just being who they are, not for doing anything wrong. And God says, I've noted what you've done, you've shed innocent blood, you're going to pay for it, yes? Yeah. But Judah will be inhabited forever, and Jerusalem through all generations. Their blood guilt, which I have not pardoned, I will pardon. Right, so God's going to show great mercies to them, and he's going to deal with those that have ill-treated them. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be inhabited forever. Yeah. Right, so who's going to live there then?
People.
God's people.
Yeah.
Yes. And who else? Last verse. The Lord's going to be there.
Yes.
So you can call that heaven if you want to. Because wherever God is, it's heaven. But it's heaven on earth. That's the idea. So Joel is prophesying after these terrible judgments, turn back to God. The days are coming when he's going to pour out the Spirit, and the days are coming when ultimately he's going to judge the world and vindicate his people and deal with the wickedness, and then it's all going to be good. I told you it was going to be good in the end.
Yeah.
Yes.